What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it is all about social, because so much stuff is happening. Twitter is continuing to fall apart. Threads now exists. That's Meta's Twitter alternative. I don't know if we should be excited about that or not. We have a special guest to talk about all that stuff. Yeah, it's another social platform. So I immediately saw Sherlyn joining and following and trying to get her clout up. Oh my God. Anyway,
it's already up.
As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Typically, we have been doing Thursday morning live streams. We're not doing that right now. We're taking a bit of a summer break as we try to reassess how we're doing live streams. So thank you to those of you who joined us. We hope to restart that soon. And tell your friends if they're not actually listening to the downloaded version, have them subscribe, folks. You can also drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. If you have any questions, send us your questions. I want to make Ask Engadget a more regular segment on the show. So yeah, let's get the question bank piled up, please. All right. Social media, once again, is on fire. So many things are happening. Joining us to talk about this is Engadget Senior Editor Krissa Bell. Krissa, how's it going?
I'm doing great.
You look very tired at this point because all the social media news, right? Are you really doing great?
Oh, God.
Yeah, you know, it's great to come back from vacation and like straight into, you know, the burning flames of Twitter.
Gosh.
I know how it feels. So let's set up some context for what's happening, because I was also off for the past 2 weeks. And thank you so much, Sherlyn, and also Sam, who was joining you, right, for doing those episodes. But over the weekend, I noticed a lot of things happening. It is nice to be on vacation, to be only like tangentially to a little bit watching Twitter rather than all the time every day. But I saw the news like, oh my God, what stupid thing did Elon Musk do this time? Announcement about rate limits. I did load it up in the morning and certain things weren't loading. He was like, Twitter rate limits. You can only view these many tweets. Blue subscribers get more. No, you know, normal users get none or get very little. And if you are not logged in to the site, you cannot see Twitter at all. And that sent everybody scrambling. And I think there were conspiracy theories that there was reporting from Casey Newton that Elon Musk did not want to pay his Google Cloud bill, which is powering a lot of Twitter. And that I think that was coming due June 30th. And that all really timed up. I think it was July 1st, right? Right around then is when the rate limiting stuff started happening. Krissa, from your perspective, you were also on vacation, but you know, what were you thinking as you saw this stuff starting to happen?
I mean, I think at this point, if we've learned anything from the Elon Musk era of Twitter, it's that nothing should surprise us. No amount of bugs or weird decisions or things randomly breaking for reasons that don't necessarily make sense. So it was just kind of like, yep, of course, this makes sense.
This makes sense. Here is a tweet from Elon Musk on July 1st. He tweeted, verified accounts are limited to reading 6,000 posts a day. And that's reading. That's not posting.
600 or 6,000?
6,000 unverified accounts to 600 posts a day. New unverified accounts to 300 a day. The service, which is based, makes money from ads. And ads are driven by people viewing posts, is now, or at least was, rate limited over the weekend. I feel like some of that has calmed down, right, Krissa? It seems like things have changed a little bit.
Yeah, it seems to be sort of back to normal for most people. I think probably some people are still kind of hitting these, but you know, I certainly haven't gotten the same error that I was getting.
Week. So all this led to, did you see this, Sherlyn? Did you see the like mass exodus of people? My blue sky has never been hotter. Of people just like hopping over and following me over the weekend. I'm like, oh, something's happening. There's a mass
migration happening right now. Bunch of followers on Blue Sky, that's for sure. But I will say the rate limit thing, it's like you said, the business model is on ads, but I also felt like Elon wanted to make more money off of people subscribing to Verified, and like he thought this was
that's
the way
what,
to get
$8 a month? $8 a month?
Right.
That's not
$8 a month to read this like garbage fire book that's unedited and full of trash ideas, right? Mm-hmm, like it's what that's I think the only that's the only reasoning I can see from all of those moves, right? You make verified people get the full, like, or the most access, and then new unverified accounts only get a little bit, and then closing down the public site altogether makes me feel like you want people to pay.
I think
you want people to enter this walled garden.
I think he was much like actually buying Twitter, Shilin. I think he was actually forced into it instead of doing some 4D chess, right? Because if you don't play your COD bill, turns out you really have to severely limit your servers. Otherwise, you're going to have to pay a lot of overage fees. Twitter also said they couldn't tell anybody about rate limiting in advance because bad actors would have taken advantage of it, which to me feels like an outright lie. I don't know how it feels to you, Carissa.
Yeah, I mean, Elon has been on this thing lately about, you know, trying to prevent the open AIs and other large language models from kind of like scraping Twitter's data. So I believe that was his initial reasoning for this, saying we need to prevent scrapers who are, you know, just going hog wild on all our data and not paying us for it. And he kind of has a little bit of a personal beef, particularly with OpenAI due to his involvement with that company.
Real quick, like, he helped like co-found OpenAI, right? And he was basically kicked out when he was trying to take control. That was the story.
Yeah, he tried to take control of it. It didn't work. Sam Altman ended up being CEO of it instead. So he sort of stepped back from it. And then now that they're getting all the attention as like kind of the hottest thing in AI right now, which, you know, he of course wants to be Tesla and, you know, perhaps one day Twitter, you know, makes him very unhappy.
There's so many things happening right now. So, okay, Twitter on fire, people escaping. I'm seeing people going to Blue Sky. I'm seeing people going to Mastodon. And I think this was the weekend where I kind of finally sat down and was just like, okay, well, where do I stand in this future of social media? Like, I'm doing the Blue Sky thing because all my media people are there. All my like film journalist friends apparently went over there too. A lot of techie people I know and programmers and open source people are on Mastodon. I feel like, okay, my attention is being split here. But my heart now feels, despite what I've been feeling before, I still feel like my heart is with Mastodon and the future of this whole decentralized thing. Shirlin, like, how are you feeling? How were you this weekend on social media?
I did not give a shit about what was going on until yesterday. Uh-huh. And I'm sure we'll get a little more into it. I found my new home, y'all. We can talk about this at length, man. But it's not Mastodon. It's not Blue Sky.
It's basic over here.
It's what? hey. We'll talk more about
we'll talk
this,
about
but
it.
I will explain to you why I have preferred Threads so far.
Carissa, how was how was Carissa's social media weekend then, post Twitter?
You know, I was still coming off of vacation, so I just kind of got to the point where I was like, you know, I'm gonna just try to be social media free. I did notice more activity on Blue Sky. I've been fairly active, at least lurker there for a while. I think I saw on probably yesterday that something like 50,000 people joined Blue Sky over the weekend, which may not sound very big, but it's still a closed platform. You still need an invite. So that's a pretty big spike when I think their total users is something around maybe 250,000.
They haven't really accelerated invites either. So it's still like you get one invite every 2 weeks. I think really, really high profile users may get more. So that's the whole thing. That's a way to like scale and limit it to, that's one way to keep bad actors out, you know? I don't know.
What's funny to me out of all of this is that, like, Elon did this for, like, I think, again, my suspicion is the reason is to get more people to pay for verified or to create accounts so that they don't see the public tweets, whatever. And instead, this is the result. We got large jumps in followers or account creations in other platforms. Just Mastodon and Blue Sky alone, not to mention Threads. Again, this is, like, I've been thinking about this in the 24
hours. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, less than 12 hours less since Threads launched. But, like, Jesus Christ, like, this is where everyone went. I swear to God, like,
it's
Adam Mosseri this morning said 10 million account activations on Threads. Holy shit. That's, like, it's not. Look, 250,000 on what mess was that? Blue Sky or
Blue Sky.
On? I forget.
Because it's a limited it's Blue Sky. Me. Yeah, the numbers certainly tell a story. So Zuckerberg and also Mosseri, who also heads up Instagram and Threads, which is Meta's app, is an offshoot of Instagram. So the Instagram team is working on Threads. We will talk more about this, but they basically said 10 million users in 7 hours, which is pretty impressive. They're clearly winning the numbers game. But I do have to say, like, it is a weird comparison because Blue Sky is doing a totally different thing. I'll tell you guys this. So the run up to Threads launching is we saw news that, hey, by the way, Threads is coming. Like they put up a pre-order thing for the App Store for you to like sign up to be alerted when Threads was coming. It felt like a whole big promotion, almost like a blockbuster movie type thing. It's like Threads is coming. You gotta secure your spot. I truly don't understand this, but yeah, it finally launched last night. What was your sign up process like, Sherlyn and Carissa?
I mean, it's just one button. I think that's a big part of why they've gotten so much scale so quickly. I mean, they already have like more than a billion users on Instagram. And then you say, hey, here's this new thing everyone's talking about. And you literally just have to hit one button and it links everything, pulls in your whole account, pulls in your whole graph.
Imports. Yeah. So to be clear, it imports. You could just be like, you could create it as a new account, or you could just create it as sort of like, import all my Instagram settings. And when you do that, it auto-follows a bunch of people. It didn't actually do the auto-following when I was doing it. But I do think that import button is key, right?
You don't have to auto-follow. I was presented the option to follow everyone I follow or not. Yeah. Which is nice. I don't want to follow everyone I follow on Instagram. In fact, I took this as an opportunity to call the list, really. My alert to the situation, because I kind of heard about Threads, but I didn't know really what it might be. All I did was I got an alert on Instagram going like, hey, these few people posted on Threads for the first time.
That's how they get
it. Oh, shit. It's up. And that's how it's smart. That's how I went in and I was like, all right, I'll sign up. And like Carissa said, it's one button. It's like so few steps. I use the same Instagram picture, same profile picture across both. I crafted a new profile that was more Twitter-like, I guess, a bio, I mean. And then it was buck wild from there. Because I don't know, Devendra and Carissa, if you had the same experience, but people, I joined a little late. I was a few hours behind. But there were already people on there. I know. There are people already on there who were already like, all right, I'm going to follow this person when they're live, when they've created their account. And I think that also adds to the atmosphere that's currently on Threads. But I don't want to deviate too much from going into the Threads conversation or sticking to
it. It's all part of it. It's all part of it, right? Because I think what is key so far is Threads, hey, taps directly into the social graph of Instagram and Meta, which Instagram alone has a billion users. Facebook still has, what, over 2 billion users? Like some freaking ridiculous number. So if this were to be a numbers game, if you're playing like, hey, who got the most signups most quickly? Obviously, it's whatever Meta does. Carissa, like, how do you feel about Threads at this point? Like, to me, it looks like a pretty basic Twitter replacement. Honestly, it looks very basic because it doesn't have some of the features we expect from these clients at this point. There's no editing. You can't actually search for tweets. You can't search for messages. You can only search for people. There's no alt image text, which is awful for accessibility. What are your thoughts, Carissa?
I mean, I think, you know, right now what we're seeing is sort of the classic Mark Zuckerberg Facebook growth hacking playbook. Mm-hmm, you know, there's kind of been this narrative for a while that like, you know, Facebook's platform is like really aging. They're like not as cool anymore. But we forget that like, you know, it's not easy thing to build, you know, these billion plus networks, and they have a playbook they know works. They are clearly very strategic about the rollout and everything. I think, you know, the features are pretty basic right now. I think that's expected. They've been, you know, Zuckerberg and Mosseri have been talking a lot on Threads about they will add just a following only feed. They're going to add new features, potentially DMs. One day there'll be advertising, you know. So I think we'll kind of see the familiar, you know, their sort of like product playbook play out probably fairly quickly. You know, they have thousands of people that they can just throw at this thing. They can build out features really quickly. To me, the thing that I'm really interested to watch is they have right now, this is basically just an offshoot of Instagram. They do plan to support ActivityPub in the future.
Yes.
And that's the protocol, the open source protocol that powers Mastodon and these sort of other like nascent platforms that you know people call the Fediverse.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm really interested to see how long that takes and how that actually works in practice, because I think that's sort of the feature that like most people on there right now aren't thinking about or talking about. But if we do have a scenario where all of a sudden you can follow Mastodon, you know, maybe these other platforms via your Threads account, interact with their content, you can create like other instances. I think that's going to get really interesting because this is sort of like, I think if you read between the lines of a lot of what Mark Zuckerberg has talked about over the years in terms of like interoperability and, you know, things like that. I think he sort of started to embrace the idea of like less centralized platforms. And, you know, the company was pretty explicit about that in their, you know, their announcement posts about this. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see if they actually kind of follow through on their promises, because I think it's going to be a lot more complicated than just building like a, you know, something that's within Instagram's walled garden.
You mentioned something really interesting there, by the way, Carissa. There is no way to see a feed of just your followers. Yep. Doesn't exist.
Look,
it's an algorithm only feed. Mm-hmm. Man, look, yeah.
There is a very long list of things that need to come, right? Uh-huh. Editing, edit button, right? And free edit button, not for paid users. Or whatever. Right now, the people who have blue check marks on Instagram get them on Threads too, which doesn't really make sense to me, but whatever.
Yeah. And then, it's hard to get a blue check on Instagram too. Like that was always
well, harder. There's a version that you pay now. Exactly.
You only pay for it now. It's Meta verified.
Exactly. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing as Twitter now. It doesn't matter at all. Then the other one is a feed of people you follow, which is that right now it's just algorithmic. And actually, it makes a lot of sense. I saw analysis on Threads itself that the big difference between Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Threads is that like Threads for Mastodon and Blue Sky, it often feels like very empty and barren wasteland when you look at your timeline, because if you follow very few people, especially Blue Sky at the start, it just feels boring. Whereas now I'm like, oh crap, there are these like a billion, well, not a billion, maybe like 10 million funny people.
A lot of people.
A lot of funny hot takes. A lot of, well, the brands are there. Okay, never mind. Then there's the fact that like, yes, a lot of accessibility features haven't been built in. There are some, but there's not all, and they still need to work on that. And searching through hashtags, searching for people, like you said, Devendra. And I can't remember, there was like a couple features I really have been waiting to see. There's a long list.
There's a long list. I agree. We mentioned some of that. I'm just saying the basic feature of people you follow to just show me a list of people I'm following. You cannot see that.
Right. I think you need to, well, you mean a list of tweets from people you follow,
yes,
right?
Because yes, you
can't see your followers list.
The thing, the actual list of tweets, the thing right. that many
there should
Twitter
be both.
People like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. There should be both the algorithmic feed and the people you're following feed. Right now is just the for you, I guess. It feels very
just
TikTok-y
the for you.
To me.
Yeah.
It really feels like the TikTok algorithm, but tweets.
You have the choice on TikTok only. Too. You can swipe over to the feeds you're just following too. It's the same thing.
Right.
So it's just
somewhere on their list.
It's the Instagram idea, right? Your Instagram feed is a pure algorithm feed, right? And it's just that applied to text. To me, that's not super attractive. I think for new users, like you're saying, Sherlyn, sure, yes, stuff is happening. The feed is going down. You know, Threads go burr. And I'm like, yeah, I'm faving things. I'm liking things. And I think like, I don't know. I feel like I had a bit of a philosophical sit down this weekend where I'm like, okay, what do I want the future of web communication to be? I don't want it to be Meta, even though like Meta has taken over. I don't want it to be like the future of whatever Twitter was. I don't want that forum to be Meta, because what is Facebook right now? What is Instagram for a lot of people? It's a place where the relatives you don't want to talk to are there, right? Like it is not... It's a
that's
whole
Facebook.
Different...
I don't see that as Instagram. I think
I still see that
driving.
On Instagram. There was a great recent guest Ryan Broderick over on his Garbage Day newsletter also wrote up like a good piece on all this stuff. He referenced something. The tech analyst Fane Greenwood calls this the terrible uncle problem. In a recent skeet, Greenwood said, Meta ensuring Threads integrates with Facebook and Instagram means your weird older relatives will easily be able to find you there. A lot of people don't want that. True. Very true. Like my Twitter personality is different from my Facebook stuff because my family will never go to Twitter. Now it's all going to be smushed into one thing, right?
One of the earlier retweets or reposts, mm-hmm. or I don't know what the word is, rethread, that I did uh-huh. was of this person who said, sorry for all my Instagram friends who are experiencing my Twitter personality for the first time.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. I mean, it's true what you're saying, but I think Facebook has already embedded itself, itself into our lives,
it
right?
Has,
we've WhatsApp, don't forget. And yes, Instagram, it's all. But that's part of the appeal, unfortunately.
It is.
Because
it is.
I want
it's
my Instagram friends to know me on Threads as well, right? And so it's like, it is that convenience. And I think that that's where Meta has this advantage. And obviously, I mean, I think Carissa, you know best. Like, what I think, just on the pure numbers game alone, Meta and Threads has the biggest staying power here.
I mean, I think that's true initially. I think a lot is going to depend on how quickly they're able to, you know, add these new features. You know, if this kind of just becomes a novelty, if, like, you know, in a month or two, you go onto Threads and, like, you know, all your meme accounts and influencers and people aren't posting as much, you know, could peter out. We've certainly, like, seen that happen before. You know, it's also still worth watching, you know, Blue Sky and some of these other platforms that, you know, they have a lot of influential users there too. Like, I don't think we should necessarily, like, declare, like, Meta the Twitter alternative winner just yet.
Everyone is saying, like, yeah, Threads wins because of the numbers. And I feel like that really flattens, like, what this discourse actually is, because it's really, it's not about the numbers. Numbers is one aspect, but it's the community. It's the conversation, you know, like, a big part of Twitter was it was a social graph that everybody could really access. Like, you could tweet at a celebrity or somebody well-known, and sometimes they would dialogue back to you. And that was, like, a forum that we never really had before on the internet. To me, it was always the sort of, like, most egalitarian version of communicating on the internet.
Yeah, that's happening on Threads for me and not Mastodon or Blue Sky.
Sure. I mean, it is, that's, yeah.
But I think that, you know, it also depends on what you use these platforms are. Like, when you think of, like, the classic Twitter experience that made, you know, kind of put Twitter on the map, it's sort of breaking news, being able to follow real-time events in the world, because it's, you know, everyone from pundits and politicians and world leaders and journalists and, like, just kind of everyone mashed together, and you can kind of really have this sense that, like, if you want to know, like, what's going on in the world anywhere, like, you go on Twitter and it's happening on Twitter. And I have a hard time seeing Meta kind of have that same kind of vision. Even if they do have a following feed, they improve search and algorithms, like, they just don't care about the news that way. They don't, you know, like, they're being very hostile to news organizations right now, threatening to take news off their platform. So I think in terms of, like, a social space where everyone kind of just can yell at each other in real time, have conversations, you know, banter or memes, whatever, like, I think it will probably be very good at that. But I suspect we'll still need somewhere else if you kind of want that kind of classic Twitter, what's going on in the world. I mean, can you imagine, like, emergency services being on Threads and being like, hey, you know, or the MTA, like, giving you subway alert. Like, you just...
It doesn't work because algorithmic feed, and you can't, there's no guarantee that emergency post actually gets to the people it needs to. Yeah.
That reminds me of the thing that I thought Threads was missing that I haven't gotten to on my list of things I want Threads to have: a web client. I need the desktop client interface. They're still not here. That's very important. I think that
very Instagram.
Right now you can you can view Threads on the web, but you can't use it to post anything just yet. I feel like it's a feature that's coming, but yeah, I think
has that come to Instagram yet?
Yeah, you can
upload from the web. Yeah. Because every time I click a web Instagram link, it's just like failure. It's just like, log in. I don't want to log in. I just want to see the post.
You don't want to log in.
And then,
I know. It's pretty annoying. And I agree with, like, Carissa, which is that, like, as a social platform, definitely. And you already can tell that it is, like what you said, Carissa, out of the Meta playbook, which is that the notifications are, like, on steroids. It's insane.
I had to kill the notifications. Yeah.
You have to. And then the way they try to suck you in, it's very... it's addiction based as opposed to, like, a more, you know, open source of information intention.
Yeah, the goal is growth hacking, like you said, Carissa, and Zuck is very good at that. He's bought companies to do that, basically, so that you don't get to a billion users without, like, you know, putting your growth metrics on steroids somehow. So they are very good at that. Building an actual community, building a thing that's useful, that's organic. Like, you can't force that, and I guess we have to sit back and wait and see. I'll tell you guys a few things right now. Do not forget that. Do you remember XMPP? Do you remember the messaging?
That's a throwback.
The supposed interchangeable messaging format that WhatsApp supported and several other clients supported, and Meta, Facebook back then was like, oh yeah, we're all about the interoperability of messaging clients. Dead. Fully dead. because of the WhatsApp acquisition, because they like fully just built on their own thing. And I guess they built it all around Facebook Messenger, right? So dead. Right now, we have so many other options popping up. There is Blue Sky. There's also Spill, which I saw a lot of people jumping to. And this one's worth just mentioning because it is, I believe it was founded by some former Twitter engineers. It has become like a place for Black Twitter to also go and to find a community and to be safe. And it's supposed to be very like LGBTQ safe as well. So that is a space people are going to. Mastodon is still doing a thing, like Mastodon signups, not the level of Threads, but it is still growing really quickly. I got a lot of followers this weekend. And I think what I'm coming down with is like, you know what, guys, like we have lived through so many of these closed platforms and seeing them die. If we have a good decentralized thing that works right now and is being looked like other people are looking to support, I feel like Mastodon's like the thing I want to invest time in. Blue Sky can be a part of that. There are some Mastodon clients that can also hook into Blue Sky, and maybe eventually they'll be able to talk to each other. So maybe it won't, this whole thing will be moot. Like maybe we can all talk to each other eventually thanks to decentralization. But yeah, it seems like that to me, that's the future. I think Mastodon can be very NIMBY-esque of people who shout at you if you're not doing things the Mastodon way. But I have also learned you could just ignore them. You could just like mute them or like not follow them anymore. There are things like, yeah, putting alt text on images is a thing that everybody should be doing. I just think like some of the attitudes at Mastodon need some changing, but that's going to happen over time as more people come on. And I just generally like the conversations I'm having more there. Carissa, Sherlyn, like what are your big takeaways right now? Sherlyn, sounds like you're all in on Threads to me.
I'm sorry. Yes, I hate to admit this, but I mean, it's so fun, right? A lot of people have been describing it as fun? Like, oh, okay. This is when it's like the senior year of high school or something, when everyone gets locked up in the gym and everyone's going buck wild and crazy. It's that's the
what environment did they do in your right high now. School, Sherlyn?
Well, no, not me. Someone else tweeted this. Threaded this. Okay. Haha. I'm discovering new features. I'm like, oh god, you can like hit the return key twice and quickly start a new thread post, you know? And it's just like there's a lot of little hidden things that are figuring out. I know it's not the most useful feature, but it is like a new land and it still feels like it can stake your claim on things. I don't like that your name is tied to your Twitter. I'm sorry, your Instagram handle, but you know, it's again like a new space. It's nascent, like Carissa said. Who knows what's to come? Who knows what's going to change for better or worse? Maybe I'll hate it in a week. I also want to point out that like I wanted about an hour ago, as of recording this podcast, Twitter CEO, I believe, Linda Yaccarino. Carissa, is that correct?
Quote CEO. Tweeted, sure.
She tweeted that on Twitter, everyone's voice matters. She basically took a stab at Threads, saying that like Twitter can be imitated but never duplicated.
Says the woman who said nothing as Twitter was falling apart.
I know. She says we're often imitated, but the Twitter community can never be duplicated. You build a Twitter community that's irreplaceable. This is your public square. She tweeted this like 10:45 a.m. today. It's okay, cool. I mean, we're clearly on the cusp of something that's happening at top speed. Who's to say how Elon reacts? We'll see. I don't know. I'm more interested in like what Carissa said, that Fediverse thing. That's very intriguing. Very curious to see how that goes.
Yeah, main takeaway, Carissa. And there's a couple other things we'll mention before we close.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're both right. Threads right now is the shiny new thing. You know, we shouldn't forget Meta has a long history of rolling out things too quickly without fully thinking through exactly how they work. You know, they said, like, for example, Instagram's community guidelines are going to apply. We haven't heard really anything about, like, are they increasing moderators for this? I would think they would need to. How is moderation going to work? Are they going to just be fully relying on AI? I think if we've learned anything, it's that, you know, it's not going to be too long before we'll see people try to, you know, game this, take advantage, break the rules, do bad things. I think that's just going to happen when you have millions of people in one place. And to go back to your point, Dev, I think it is really interesting right now to, you know, you're talking a lot about Mastodon. CEO of Mastodon wrote a blog post last night basically saying that he was really excited about Threads, that they're going to support ActivityPub. He thinks it's good for kind of the ecosystem. And this is something I've been thinking about for a while, because it does kind of feel like we're at this moment where there's a bit of a paradigm shift potentially in terms of like social platforms moving to these decentralized protocols, kind of changing how they think about, you know, just having one big service. And some of that was brought on by Musk, but, you know, Mastodon, it was, you know, predates that by quite a bit. And so I think it's going to be interesting to watch because, you know, now that we're seeing, you know, it's a pretty big deal that if we see Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg kind of committing to supporting these protocols as well. And so it could really vastly change sort of the way we think about these platforms and our social graph and our following. So yeah, I think it's just something we have to watch, see how it happens. But, you know, this could be mm-hmm. a big deal.
It's a big deal. I mean, this is a pretty momentous week for social media. So that's why I wanted to kind of just like hit this moment. A couple of things worth mentioning. A lot of people were posting about the privacy issues around Threads right now. You can even see this on the App Store. Threads on the store is like, is tracking a lot of things. Ad data, personal information, tons of things. The Mastodon CEO, I love their flex, like, we track nothing. Nothing. We are totally, like, they don't need to because they're not building this algorithm and they're not building this whole ad system around it. So that is worth noting. Somebody also pointed out that if you sign up for Threads and you decide to close your account, you cannot close your account without killing your Instagram account. Which to me just seems like, oh, that is problematic. That is just like, well, yeah, I guess you're stuck, everybody. I mean, you can still stop using your account, but you cannot delete it without deleting your Instagram account. So, seems like a problem.
You know,
very Hotel California.
I find it funny.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's true.
Oh, gosh. I
Zach's favorite song, I'm sure.
Oh, no. I didn't know if I remember seeing this, but I never got that prompt that iOS does when you install a new app to be like, ask app not to track
data. That's true. Maybe it's taking over your whatever you chose for Instagram.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's true. But you can always actually change that setting to in your settings.
So I'm going to go.
You can always do that. Let me just see here. Ben, you put in something. People are thinking of Mastodon sort of the Linux of social media, sort of. It is the thing that requires the most work. You do have to like go find people, but they have trending feeds. Like there are easy ways to find people. It just could be better. It's not going to like give you a ton of good content immediately. So you have to do that work yourself, but I do think it's worth it. So I think the techier folks among us may want to spend a little time on Mastodon. And I need to figure out that client. There's one good Mastodon client that can do Blue Sky at the same time. So I'm going to take a look at that. Ben also suggested, let's try to find a term for posts on Threads. Are they just threads?
Because that, again, is stealing. Tits was a very popular one.
What? Come again?
No, I'm going to say that again. Say that once, say that again. And only once.
Even Threads, the name, is a thing on Twitter. It is a feature of Twitter that is now the name of this thing for Meta.
Right. So, it's also a good pun. Everyone's been like, oh, thread count. Like, I mean, when Mosseri went up, I was like, oh, he's posting about his 10 million thread count. Yeah. He was in bed too, which is like kind of weird.
I don't know what we call them. Can they all be sewing puns or something? I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know where we go with this.
Needles.
Yeah. Pokes.
Yeah. Yarns.
I
saw Dieter Bones.
They do have pokes. Facebook does have pokes.
I think, was it Yarns an app like years ago? Yeah. There was like a Yarns.
Probably.
Like in 2014 or something.
Well, send us, people listening, send us your ideas for what we should call posts on Threads, podcast@engadget.com, or hit me up on Threads, which is what I'm looking at on my phone right now as we record this. I'm so not paying attention.
Yeah,
you already said
it's a problem.
Threads literally had to do nothing but exist. And Sherilyn was just like, I'm addicted. I'm there.
No, it's all about the followers. I'm all about it's not even people I know. It's like they're not
Instagram.
On my Instagram.
It's your Instagram.
No, they're not. They're just because it's anyway. It's the TL anyway.
It's it's whatever makes you feel the best about your social media timelines. Anyway, Carissa, thank you so much for joining us. Follow along with Carissa's reporting on Engadget. I'm sure you'll be writing about all this stuff. Where can we find you now on the internet, Carissa?
You can still find me on Twitter. You can find me on Blue Sky. You can find me on Threads, all of them. I am Carissa.
What is your username? Carissa Bell? Carissa B?
Carissa B.
Carissa B. Okay.
Yeah.
Carissa B. All right.
Thank you so much, Carissa.
Thank you so much.
Well, there was a bunch of other news this week, starting with a slew of leaks. I think the most interesting one is that Apple is rumored to be working on its next set of AirPods Pro. And it would have a bunch of different like health-related mm-hmm. features, including hearing health. I mean, I think we've seen a lot of slow little trickle of features from Apple that seems like it's leading in that direction. There are already like audiogram profiles on AirPods that can, you know, customize sound to fit your specific hearing profile. But according to Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, who is pretty on the nose usually with his leaks about Apple especially, new health features are on the way for the AirPods Pro, apparently. One of the earliest that would come out, according to Gurman, is sort of allowing your AirPods to conduct a hearing test for you. Again, very similar to that customizing the hearing, spatial audio, that sort of thing, but now it's using it to give you a score on your hearing. And then it can then allow you to potentially use AirPods as hearing aids. There were, you know, FDA regulations that recently made it easier for Americans to buy over-the-counter hearing aids. And we're seeing a lot more hearing aid makers create devices that fit in your ear better, as opposed to the big, bulky hearing aids of the past. We've got them more like true wireless earbuds now.
And so the AirPods Pro, like, they already have features, right, to basically amplify some outside sound, yes, for some people.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Accessibility-related features that would make surrounding sound louder. It would detect, it would also help you reduce exposure to loud noise. So this, again, is in line with everything we've heard or have seen with AirPods development so far. Another thing that's quite interesting in this set of, in this report from Gurman, is a potential built-in temperature sensor the AirPods Pro could come with. Don't forget, the Watch Series 8 and the Watch Ultra already have, you know, temperature sensors on them. This could help you detect, you know, body temperature for whatever feature Apple is working on. I don't think it's one of those ad hoc, you know, fever readers. It's more like, oh, you could be ovulating, similar to the way the Apple Watch does it. And Gurman does say, you know, these are both several months or even years away. Immediate potential update for the AirPods Pro is probably a USB-C charging case, which
just the case.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Just the case. Buds. Yeah,
the buds don't have.
The buds are really good. Like I have the AirPods Pro 2. I bought them twice because I lost my first pair, and it's in a nearby town. But it's good enough that I was like, God damn, I need these in my life. So yeah, I had to buy them again.
They're pretty good devices, and they're pretty like, what's that? Ubiquitous now, I think. They're all over.
And I think just very, very useful. Especially they announced a whole bunch of new features. We didn't really talk about these, but the sort of like the automatic detection of like, hey, cancel noise now, transparency now, I think will be
super. I mean, I can't wait to see how it all works, right? I mean, I'm very skeptical about how it's going to work, but we'll see. And I'm sure when all the beta software comes out, we'll be the first to test them. So there we go. Speaking of body temperature sensors and leaks, we've got on the other end of the tech industry spectrum, Google. The Pixel 8 Pro, which is the next Pixel flagship, according to someone affiliated with Google that has been talking their lips off on Reddit.
They took photos with this thing, apparently. Not a smart idea.
They got their hands on a Pixel 8 Pro, and apparently, they used the new camera on the Pixel 8 Pro prototype they have their hands on and took some photos, posted the samples onto Reddit. But also, this phone supposedly might have a body temperature sensor on it as well, which would be very interesting.
Sure.
But more specs-wise, I think we have pretty good idea of what camera array to expect. We've got a 50-megapixel main camera, according to this report, that would allow 50% more light in. It's got a 64-megapixel ultra-wide camera. And the screen is flat as opposed to curved on previous Pro models of the Pixel line. And then, similarly, according to another leak, they will have a 5,000 milliamp-hour battery, which is, you know, similar to the Pixel 7 Pro.
This sure looks like a Pixel phone. Looks yeah. like a Pixel phone. I know.
It's going to okay. look the same, except for the screen's flat. I mean, the camera's probably better. The temperature sensor might be interesting.
Well, the Tensor G3 chip is the rumor here. And it is funny you guys just talked about the Pixel Fold, which to me seems like it should be the flagship phone for Google this year. Tensor G2.
They are still experimenting, it seems like.
So confusing.
Well, okay. I think also timing. I don't think they're ready. I think they stick to pretty like strict cycles and schedules with these things, maybe.
Yeah, but delay the fall till the fall. That's all.
They
you
should.
Know.
They could have. They could have. Yeah. They really were looking at Samsung, maybe. Yeah. I do think that the it's worth noting that all of this should be taken with not like just a grain of salt, but also the knowledge that these are early devices, prototypes, right? Nothing is set in stone. Things could change. I mean, it gives us a good idea of what's to come, but I think the specifics are still not like finalized just yet. That's my sense anyway. And also Google having that temperature sensor on the Pixel 8 Pro, should it be real, would track with some of the things I've seen and heard so far just from interacting with Googlers. I think Google is working on gathering more data to put its AI to come up with more applications of things that could be helpful and useful to people. Google has worked on stuff in the past that allows you to use your camera to detect if you have certain types of skin, I don't know, not imperfection, like skin health things, right? They've used the phone to do a lot. And with an actual body temperature sensor in there, who knows what else Google might be able to achieve. So I think it's intriguing. I think it's a sign of things to come.
I never want to put too much hope or credit towards Google for anything these days. But it could be interesting if you had temp sensor on the phone, if you were at home and it was communicating with your Google, you know, your Nest thermostat, is like, oh, this particular room is getting a little too hot. I will kick up the AC or something. That would be nice.
I get it.
There was another phone you want to talk about too, right?
So a couple of phones were launched / announced this week. I'm going to just blaze through them. I think the Fairphone 4 is something we've heard about a while. This is kind of a very repairable phone. It's also a phone that's
the most repairable phone ever. Yeah. 10 out of 10 from iFixit. So yeah,
exactly. So if you're into that kind of thing, you're into like, you know, being able to hold on to a phone for years and years, but only replacing certain parts when they, you know, degrade or stuff like that, you will start to be able to buy it in the US. It is a sustainability focused phone, and previously was available only like outside of the US, I think.
Yeah.
To be clear though, you're not like, it's going to start at $599. Yeah, it's going to start at $599. It's going to come with 6 gigs of RAM, only 128 gigs of storage, and it's running with a mid-range Qualcomm chip from 2020. Don't expect the world. This $600 feels like it could go somewhere else, somewhere better. But if you're into the sustainability component, yeah, this might be good.
If you want a repairable phone, this is like the thing. It's not only repairable;
it's also got like an IP rating of IP54, which is not bad for a phone that's so like disassemblable. Mm-hmm. I just came up with my own word. Other specs on this Fairphone 4 that's coming to the US: it's got dual SIM support. You've got a dual 48 megapixel rear camera, 25 megapixel front camera, USB-C charging, 6.3 inch screen, and they are all individual parts that you can replace from Mirena. So I think that's why it took a while to get here, because we needed to find the third party retailer and parts support.
That makes sense. I see a good question here too from podcast producer Ben. What OS does it run?
It's an Android phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, but de-Googled.
It's running, what do you call this? /E/ or just E? That's me describing every Google consumer product. So let's reserve
that.
I
mean, the Fairphone is not a Google consumer product, but there you go.
So just to be clear, the E operating system is like, it's de-Google, doesn't have Google stock apps. It also has like a lot more privacy protection too. So that's, you know, as you download individual apps, even from the Play Store, you have a little more. It's not sharing info with Google as you're getting apps. So that's kind of cool to some people. Yeah.
There's a lot to like about the Fairphone, and there's a lot intriguing about the Fairphone. I do not like the old specs, but you know, you could always upgrade components as you see fit.
I don't know. Yeah.
If you want a mid-range phone that might have better specs and you live in Europe? AKA not the US. The OnePlus Nord 3 also launched this week. And surprisingly, for a phone that starts at like $490, it comes with a 120Hz screen, 80W fast charging. It's a 6.7-inch display, and it's going to be able to deliver a 60% charge in 15 minutes, like most OnePlus phones. But it uses a MediaTek Dimensity 9000 chip, which has been pretty good on other devices, but that's probably why they got the price low. It's MediaTek's.
It's MediaTek, baby. Also, like, I would never trust something called Dimensity. I don't know what you're really going for there, but if your brand is Dimensity, no thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you're willing to splash $597 or about $600, same as the Fairphone 4's price, you'll get 16 gigs of RAM, 256 gigs of storage, although note the camera array is not as good. Yeah, I mean, look, different phones launched this week, worth paying attention to if you're in the market, but I think you might want to wait until October if you're in the market for a new phone, which is when we expect all of the different companies like Google, Apple, and Samsung to be launching new phones. In fact, actually, Samsung slated to have its foldables event like July 26th. Uh-huh. I've been saying this date over and over because I keep imagining things in my head. I heard numbers and they're not necessarily the actual final dates. So anyway, Samsung also announced this week that Galaxy Unpacked will be taking place July 26th in South Korea. I almost said North Korea. All right. Another piece of news this week actually happened today, and it's very disheartening. Geo Media, the owner of sites like Gizmodo and io9 and Jezebel, has apparently started using AI to generate articles for their websites. After a lot of controversy over, you know, their editor-in-chief Jim Spam, their owner Jim Spanfeller, editor-in-chief, and just lots of really bad practices, this seems like yet another shitty move. We only really found out because James Whitbrook, who is the deputy editor at io9, and Gizmodo, tweeted today that they were only informed about 10 minutes before an AI-generated article appeared on io9, and that no one at io9 played a part in its editing or publication. James Whitbrook also goes on to share a statement that they've sent to Geo Media alongside a lengthy list of corrections, Whitbrook said. You can feel free to read that statement on James's Twitter.
The thing I want to point out here, too, it's not just the fact that it's an AI-generated article, because those are popping up everywhere. It was a basic-ass, here's a chronological list of Star Wars movies and TV shows, giving the timeline. Filled with
so the That's one the we're issue. Referring to, yeah.
Yeah.
So James Whitbrook was referring to an article on io9, and we're now looking at an article that appeared on Gizmodo as well. It has the byline by Gizmodo bot, just in case, you know, just I like that that's somewhat transparent,
yeah.
At least.
It's the same site, by the way. So, like, yeah.
Yeah, Giz and io9, yeah. Basically the same
It's thing. All interchangeable.
Because they repurpose and share articles anyway. Mm-hmm. So, a chronological list of Star Wars movies and TV shows is the headline. The subhead is from the prequels to the sequels. Here's the order to watch the Star Wars saga. And then, literally, it's just a list, like Devendra said, of one, two, three, four. Yeah.
I'm reading, first of all, that list is incorrect. It's numbered incorrectly. It omits Disney's Star Wars Andor series or Obi-Wan Kenobi or the Book of Boba Fett. It lists the Clone Wars series as coming after the events of The Rise of Skywalker, which is incorrect. You had one job.
I wanted to, before Devendra like started reading this, I wanted to read this out to you, Devendra, and watch you get progressively more angry as I read the list.
Let me be absolutely clear here, too. No shade to the lovely writers at Gizmodo and our friends and colleagues at Gizmodo.
They did write an article already that was better about the chronological order in which to watch the Star Wars movies and TV shows. However, the AI Gizmodo bot did poorly. So if this is a topic obviously close to my heart, I mean, this is our industry, this is our jobs specifically, and this is very much our, you know, area of coverage, AI. So we've heard about sites like CNET doing stuff like that. We've now seen Geo Media starting to take the plunge. And I've heard just from friends that different publications are having conversations about how AI can, you know, supplement or help with writing articles. And I think that, that there is a place for AI in publications, and maybe I hesitate to say journalism. I don't think AI can ever do journalism, but in creating lists of things. But now we're seeing it's pretty shitty so far. So I'm mostly just curious what people think, right? So if you have thoughts on AI-generated articles on legitimate websites, you send your thoughts to us, podcast@engadget.com. We're still human beings here. We will reply.
We're still humans for now. I don't know. I don't know about Sherlyn sometimes. Sometimes it is Sherlyn bot. When you put Solitaire robotic in front of Sherlyn,
she does turn into a robot.
One thing I want to point out about this AI article and the stuff we've seen from CNET is that they are typically filled with very, very simple errors. You know, so if a single person had looked at it, and I'm not saying editorial should be doing this, because maybe you should be keeping the AI generated content separate completely from editorial, but at least have somebody in charge of the AI. You know, if you just think you're going to get the AI to spit out stuff that you can use, and then it's editorial that has to pay for it. It's the human who has to fix it. Yeah.
Right. I was going to make this point before you said the thing about like someone editorial doesn't have to do this. It does kind of defeat the purpose of having automated or auto-generated content, right? It does still require work, but I think we still need human oversight. Anyway, go on.
We kind of do. The AI can't do everything. So anyway, we have covered articles too here at Engadget like several years ago too. This was like 2016 era.
Oh, we did. Yeah, we sure have had AI write stuff.
And other people, like, we experimented with having AI write stuff as an experiment, as a sort of declaration, like, hey,
to cover it. Yeah.
Yeah. Can these models actually create good articles? And it did some decent stuff, and it made some spec tables. But you know, we are not sneaking any AI in yet. But you know what? If you see anything, let me know, because it shouldn't be popping up in Engadget. And I'm hoping other sites take a look at what's happening with these issues before like just throwing AI out there. I'm not saying they should never use AI, but we need oversight. We need
it also should be more thoughtful. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Indeed.
Speaking of oversight. Speaking of oversight and being more thoughtful, we've got a slew of regulation-related news this week, starting with the EU having...
The Digital Markets Act. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to tell us all about it, Dev?
I just want to quickly point out, like, so we covered this. Mariella Moon wrote a story. So the Digital Markets Act is the thing that basically defines very big companies have to be very careful about how, that they can't highlight their own services. They have to like be open and interoperable with other things. So we have the story here. Seven companies, mostly American tech giants, are now classified as gatekeepers under the EU's DMA. That's Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, TikTok owner ByteDance, Meta, Microsoft, and Samsung have declared they met those thresholds. And the thresholds are... and having an annual turnover of at least 7.5 billion euros in Europe in the last three financial years, or those with a fair market value of at least 75 billion euros. So that's a lot of folks. They must also have served more than 45 million monthly active end users and more than 10,000 yearly active business users in the EU over the last 3 years. So yeah, clearly they're aiming at, big companies.
Yeah.
This is interesting. I haven't looked at the DMA much, but we talk a lot about like the sort of market power of tech titans and what could be done to stop them or just rein them in a little. And this is really interesting. I'm not an economist. I don't know like what the long-term impacts of this will be, but this is certainly a way for like, we have issues with Amazon right now taking over certain types of businesses and not being very competitive not being very competitor friendly. I think this is a good way to stop that. Do you have any thoughts on that, Sherlyn?
I'm just surprised at Samsung's inclusion there. How are they serving that many end users a month through devices alone? Do they Samsung's through their big. Services? I know Samsung is huge. I think they sell a lot of hardware. I just don't, usually include Samsung in these things because Samsung doesn't have multiple different, types of businesses in the sense that like it does hardware. Does it have a lot of software? I've never really thought of them as that way, you know. I mean, any software they've had has been baked into their hardware, so I've always
it's all kind of tied together, right? So if you're using the hardware, you have the software.
How is Samsung being anti-competitive is what I'm thinking, but maybe
it depends. Like, I think sort of like maybe Samsung can't over highlight Bixby or something on its phone when Android Assistant is out there. There's another company that may meet gatekeeper status by the end of the year. Can you guess who that is, Sherlyn? That can be this
Netflix?
Big.
Netflix?
No. Booking.com. So.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Booking.yeah.
Booking.yeah.
Oh, my God.
I love it. I may have used Booking recently to, like, scope out prices for something. But yeah.
I don't. I like I said, I'm all baked in the Google ecosystem, so mm-hmm. I book everything through Google.com, and then I go directly to the websites. But, like, Booking.com? Damn. Yep. All right.
Also, in the EU, we had a story. Facebook will need permission to show personalized ads in the EU. This hit on July 4th. By the way, we didn't fully mention this, but Threads is not even launching in the EU because of the data collection practices and the things, I think, specifically around this, too.
I wonder if that explains why none of my, like, friends in Germany have been on it, but all the UK friends are on it.
That does explain why.
Interesting.
That's totally it. I mean, listen, this is the sort of thing where I'm like, I don't know if I can really trust Threads, because things like this, if entire, like, portions of the earth cannot get access to it. Anyway, in other news, the FTC plans to slap companies with hefty fines for using fake reviews. This is a very good thing. This is here in the U.S. I don't know how many times I go to a company's website or, like, go to their Amazon or something, and, like, I see, like, 5 stars. Everybody sounds like they're very good and they really like it. And you can't believe any of it because it's all trash. So
it's all paid. Yeah.
Yeah. The FTC plans to slap businesses that buy, sell, and manipulate online reviews up to $50,000. That's not just per review. It's also for every time a consumer sees it. So if the FTC finds that one fake review has been viewed just 20 times, that business could owe the government $1 million.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know how
they're going to enforce or figure it out.
How will they actually track this stuff?
Yeah.
That's the question. Right. Because they're not investing more.
Love these American monitoring. FTC things, because they really think this through. They really, you know, really.
That's really the
comprehensive
question.
And always sound the question.
Anyway, we have a couple other things I want to mention. Some entertainment related things. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy apparently is now asking questions about ballooning original content costs. It's amazing. Amazon spent $7 billion on original shows, content licensing, and sports streaming rights just last year alone. That's up from $5 billion the year before. Amazon spends a lot of money on these shows. The Lord of the Rings series, season one cost around $500 million. They've also basically carved out $1 billion for the first two seasons. So season two will likely cost the same amount. That show was successful, but I don't think, like, people aren't really talking about it. I thought it was pretty fine. I didn't actually finish it. Most people didn't finish it, it seems. And Amazon's investing a ton of money in original shows, and I forget if we talked about this at all, but, like, they were doing things like bringing in people for TV deals, people including like Donald Glover, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Jordan Peele, and they would sign them for overall deals, which means they give them money in exchange for bringing their TV ideas to Amazon. Doesn't have to actually amount to anything. It's just like, we are tapping you as a lead creative to bring us your ideas first. Donald Glover brought over Swarm, which I think was a lot of, that was a wild show. And Sherlyn, I think you should watch it.
Okay.
It's slightly horror, slightly like also pop music, like fandom adjacent too. Like it's pretty wild. But it's also not something that people, like, it had a decent, splash. It made a decent splash when it came out, but it's not something people are constantly talking about. They're just spending a lot of money out here. That show, Citadel, the first season cost $250 million.
Jesus Christ.
And I don't know if you've seen Citadel, Sherlyn. Like, that's one, like, one of the Game of Thrones boys and Priyanka Chopra. And they're spies or something. Every word people say in that show feels like it was written by AI, to be honest. It's not a show that feels like it was actually... Yeah, there are human writers tied to it. Yes, yes, yes. But it is so conventional. It's so, like, cookie cutter that it could have literally been written by a computer and probably would have been better if it did. So anyway, Amazon's finally, like, you know, trying to figure out where all that money is going. It's not like they're going to stop spending that money. It is just
They're just figuring it out. I bet they figure it out and then they cut. Obviously, they're going to try to stop spending some of that money. I mean, maybe where else are they... Yeah.
Maybe they cut. Maybe you start asking. I think he's just asking questions now. Because the previous I think, like, the Amazon, like, studios person, somebody new came in, who was, like, very familiar with Hollywood and, you know, was basically given carte blanche to just pay whatever it took to be successful, to make some hits. And they made things, not hits. So Jen Salke is the person who is currently leading Amazon Studios stuff. Roy Price is the predecessor who was there producing things that would win a lot of awards. So he was the guy who basically pushed Transparent, Mozart in the Jungle, Manchester by the Sea, The Big Sick, those big awards-winning movies and shows from Amazon. And then they shifted over to being more mainstream. That's what Jen Salke has been doing. I don't think this has really, like, gone anywhere. So, yeah, just a shame, just fascinating. One other thing, you should check out the story we covered in Gadget, the Sphere. Sphere is testing its giant LED video dome in Las Vegas. MSG and Sphere Entertainment are testing this thing. It is a 17,600-seat venue near the Venetian Resort that has an enormous, 560-foot across, 366 feet tall. It's an animated dome with a wraparound internal 16K OLED screen. It looks like a glowing orb from the outside, but on the inside, it's supposed to be like fully, it's like a fully immersive screen meant for concerts and cinematic experiences. Sort of like the idea in an interview to Rolling Stone, the idea is to, like, give you the VR experience without the damn goggles. This sounds so cool. I would like to go see this thing.
I know. I mean, look, what, the next time we're in Vegas would be probably in January.
I think I'm just gonna like poke these people and be like, hey, when are the previews happening? Because I need this thing has 164,000 speaker audio system.
Yeah.
164,000 speakers.
Go and look at the videos on either our website or on Twitter. It looks super cool. It's this gigantic, golf ball. With the LEDs looks, not just on the inside, on the outside is pretty eye-catching, too.
It looks like a planet. It looks like you stuck a planet in the middle of Las Vegas. It actually looks really cool.
You know Epcot? Doesn't Epcot have some sort of big globe?
It's not that. I don't think it's as big, but it does look similar to it. It's a big golf ball thing. The speaker system, by the way, can isolate specific sounds, so certain parts of the audience can only hear Spanish language dialogue. There's some really cool stuff happening.
And it's
here.
Like the 4D experience that it offers too, right? It's supposed to have a sensory experience for about 10,000 seats. You'll have haptics, cold, heat, wind, and sense. Oh my God. You might be able to like take a virtual trip to the Arctic and feel cold in your seat.
That's really cool.
And feel the wind in your face.
I reviewed the 4DX stuff. That's at the Union Square Regal Theater. I think that one's also closing, but I reviewed that for the side gig of Look Up My Stuff. I hated watching movies with it, but I could imagine a cool experience, or if you're at a concert and somebody wants to like create a vibe of like specific senses and like something like that could be really cool. It could be cool. Anyway, this thing costs up to $2.3 billion to build. It looks enormous. It's going to start with a performance, a 25 show run by U2 in September. So I don't know. It's apparently sold out.
They're the 25 shows have all effectively sold out.
It reminds me of the weird space opera that was in one of the Star Wars prequels. I think it was Revenge of the Sith. It's a bit of that. It just feels like, man, this is the future. This is the future I kind of want, like weird, crazy media. So anyway, take a look at this video, folks. Let us know, what do you think? Do you want to go visit the Sphere? What is the actual name of this thing? Is the MSG Sphere. MSG Sphere is what it's being called right now. Let us know if you want to visit this podcast at Engadget.com. let's move on to what we're working on real quick. It already feels like a shortened month because we're starting a little late. And also, I'm going to be out at the beginning of August. But in that time, I plan to review one of LG's 49-inch gaming monitors. It's one of the new Ultra Gears that just came out. I got a computer. I got a bunch of stuff I want to clear. And also some movies. I am lining up a screening and potentially interviews for Oppenheimer. And I'm very excited. I'm very excited for that movie. I'm very excited to see it at an old movie palace in Atlanta. Hopefully 70mm. I'm excited to see it again in IMAX at some point. Trillin, what are you working on?
I've been playing with the iOS 17 developer beta, as well as the watchOS 10 developer beta. And whenever those public betas are available, you'll see plenty of coverage on Engadget.com. So far, it's pretty fun. I mean, I got the sense that iOS 17 is a bigger upgrade than iOS 16 was. I'm still having some trouble kind of getting into all of the new features. I haven't spent that much time with it. I've been helping Matt Smith mostly test some of the features. And some of them I need to work with other people on the developer beta to test, like name drop, for example. But I have created my contact poster. It is cute as shit. I really like it. Been doing a bunch of editing as well. Lots of behind the scenes stuff. And with Samsung's Galaxy Unpacked coming up in about 20 days, that's also something we're prepping. So
are you traveling for Samsung, Sherlyn?
I am probably not. This show is going to be in Korea.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
we're more likely to send someone from the other side of the world, where it's closer for them, and they
that's a good RLI job. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's who we are thinking of at the moment, and we'll see. But also
you're turning down a trip to South Korea, Sherlyn? Come on.
There's a lot of people fighting too much for that. Yeah, I know. I'm almost a little burned out. I will say the event Unpacked, anyway, it starts at 7 a.m. Eastern. So this is not something that me and the East Coast U.S. crew are going to be really there to help. This is very much a U.K. and Asia gig. So
it is impossible for Sherlyn to wake up at 7 a.m. This is not going to happen.
Every day at 7 a.m.
It's just not going to happen. I know. It's just not going to happen.
It's more that I don't want to work outside of my work hours. It's like very much a work-life balance thing for me right now.
I hear you. Okay. That's going to be a fun event. I mean, I think that whole thing is a huge flex from Samsung. Because they have been like they've been pushing to New York, trying to like get the hype, and now they're like, no, come to us if you want the news. I've been hearing from a lot of people who are annoyed. They're apparently not inviting like as many analysts as they typically do too. So a lot of people are feeling a little burned, but I don't know. Okay. Sounds good. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. What do you got?
So this week, starting yesterday, 12 hours ago, I've been just freaking distracted and addicted to a lot of different things. So over the weekend, I think, or last week some point, I got my hands on the Aya Neo 2, thanks to Sam Rutherford for dropping it off. Steam is having a summer sale from now to, I think, mid-July or something like that. And so I don't have my own recommendations, but I did ask Jess for some
Dave the Diver.
Recommendations that Jess made for me include Donut County, Sayonara Wild Hearts, Gorogoa, Storyteller, Stray, and the entire Annapurna Interactive Bundle, Ace Attorney, Cult of the Lamb, Hatsune Miku. So a lot of great recommendations from Jess there. And obviously for me, it's like definitely distracted by a million things. I also want to point out that because we're not doing the live stream, I'm just a lot more relaxed right now. Really enjoying this relaxing still on my couch time.
Chill. Listen, I love the live stream, but yeah, this is just different.
I love our community so much, but this is just so much easier on me, the timing, the not having to put on makeup. It's great. Onto my actual pick that I wanted to talk about. I don't know if you've seen this or talked about this show. It's a Netflix show called The Midnight Club.
I did talk about it. I told you to watch it. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you? I don't remember. I did.
Because it's the next Mike Flanagan. So
exactly. Yeah. So it was Mike Flanagan, and I cried so hard, so many episodes. It's a show that deals with teens and kids actually dealing with death. And they tell each other stories at midnight every night. And it's very typical Mike Flanagan fare where it's creepy in parts. Can I just talk about one scene? There is a very funny scene. This ghost, after like standing creepily at the foot of someone's bed for a bit, goes to the door, opens it, like has to back up to open it, and then walks out the door as well. I'm like, are you a ghost? Or are you human? Like, aren't you just walking through that door? Why are you opening the door?
Listen.
Clumsily stumbling backwards and then walking through the doorway. This was an actual ghost. This wasn't even like a turns out to be a human sort of twist. It was a ghost. I was like, what the hell? Anyway, other than that, this is really nicely handled, very well written, and very well shot and acted.
Really
show.
Good.
It was really good.
I would say it's not I don't think it was as scary or like creepy as yeah. Flanagan's other stuff. Like I think
yeah, it's not creepy.
Midnight Mass is sort of like the Midnight apex so of how good yeah. that was, and also his Haunted House stuff. Like, you know, this is very yeah. different.
I do want to point out that on the Netflix description and in the show itself, on the first episode, they spell out that this is one of the show. This show holds the Guinness World Record for the most jump scares in a single episode of a show.
Yeah.
And like, it's deliberate to like, you it's can the first tell episode, it's jump I scare think. After yeah. jump scare. Yeah. It is the first episode.
Because
it's jump scare after jump scare after jump scare.
It's a show about kids telling stories to each other at night. Basically, Midnight Club is a Christopher Pike series, and I loved Christopher Pike, and I believe he is also working on another Christopher Pike adaptation. So, good stuff! Good stuff from people I love. Anything else you want to mention about this, Sherlyn?
No, it left me a mess. It was really, like, you have to be in a good headspace for it. It's kind of depressing in parts, but also kind of nice.
It's about terminally ill kids at a hospice, basically, and they're all, like, on death's door. And that's, like, man, the drama is there, but it's also, like, very uplifting and very sweet. You know,
it ends on kind of a cliffhanger, and then they got canceled, so there's only season one, which is really sad. If Netflix, anyone at Netflix, you're listening to this, you're a fan, hey, consider pitching a bring back of this show. It's nice.
I think Flanagan went over to Amazon or something, so he even jumped ship. Give it to Amazon. Come on. Well, here. I've got some recommendations for you. Sherlyn, did you ever watch The Bear on Hulu?
I can't. It's too stressful for me. Bye. Sorry.
It's pretty stressful. But listen, you know, as somebody, we work in sometimes stressful jobs, which puts us in pressure cooker situations where a lot of things need to happen quickly. I relate to the show so hard. The Bear season two is even better than season one. It's not all, I want to point out, it's not all the pressure cooker. I think season one leaned on that a lot more, and season two is more about, okay, how do you thrive? How do you find your purpose in life? How do you devote yourself to something, and while also managing the stress of like a situation like that? The Bear is very good. There's also one episode in season two which has way too many guest stars, but I think is pretty fantastic in terms of like encapsulating the hell of like a family holiday dinner night. It does it so well. If you just want to have like some you know, casual anxiety, Sherlyn, you know, just like a casual like run through these things. The Bear,
I already have legit anxiety. I don't need casual anxiety.
I mean, I know how you feel, but I will say, like, I especially after doing that New York trip, like, guys, do not call it a vacation. If you're traveling with kids, it's not a vacation. It is
traveling at all. I'm sorry, traveling with family at all is not a vacation.
It's not a vacation, but with kids in particular, it's like it's all anxiety. So it's like, the show is weirdly a way for me to like work through all the things that are bugging me in real life. So anyway, I relate. It's very good. Also, want to shout out I'm a Virgo on Amazon. This is the Boots Riley show about a very tall man who lives in Oakland. It's very good. It's very surreal. It's Boots Riley. So it's like he is discussing, like, you know, aspects of being Black in America and aspects of Black life and aspects of urban life, too. But also the entire show is like a metaphor, you know, it's all very clear. He's not a subtle man, but I think he's a very inventive visual stylist. I feel like, he is. Boots Riley is like turning into like Charlie Kaufman in terms of like what he's doing, like a mixture of what Charlie Kaufman, Spike Jonze used to do. Lots of weird stuff. I think he'd really enjoy it, Sherlyn, so it's worth checking out. Also, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Go check out my review at the Filmcast podcast about it. I really liked it. I was surprised by how much I liked it, but my man, James Mangold, who I think always does really interesting genre movies, he did The Wolverine. He did Logan. And I love him as a director, and I think he did some really interesting stuff in this movie, even though there's a lot of like weird CG young Harrison Ford too. So it's something to get over, but I think it's worth seeing in theater. So if you like Indiana Jones at all, go check it out. It's much better than The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which we will never talk about again.
Well, that's it for this episode this week, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elm. You can find the Vindra online at
Devendra at mastodon.social. I'm on the Blue Sky too. I'm on Threads. It's just at Devendra there. That's where I'll be for who knows how long.
If you want to get in touch with me online, you can find me starting on Threads. I am at Sherlinstagram on Threads. That's CHERLYNNSTHERAM. I am on Mastodon. I am at Sherlin at KOPITI.AM. I am on Blue Sky at Sherlin.BSky.social. And I am still on the Twitter at Sherlin. Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
Favorite one. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes and subscribe on your podcast catcher of choice. Until next time, see ya. If Ben, you had been local recording the whole time, so you heard me speculating that you went to take a big poop.